So this is about sub-diesel activity of trying to define entanglement entropy in lattice gauge series. And the problem there is that we want to reduce kind of gauge environment observables, but gauge environment observables come with a certain amount of locality. So now the main problem is that entanglement entropy is usually associated with splitting or freezing. And so how do you split?
Oh my goodness gracious.
The observance of these
two regions.
And so, what
I'm
going to say?
Self-chairing speaker.
Go. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's basically.
I'm sorry, do you mind putting on your microphone?
Okay, now you have to start over.
Thank you.
Okay, so I start again.
Thanks.
So this talk was about non-abelian lattice gauge theory and the problem to basically define gauge invariant observables. And more specifically, you want actually to have a complete maximal commuting set of gauge invariant observables because that would define you a basis of states. And I will explain how that also leads to a definition of entanglement entropy, because in non-abelian gauge lattice gauge series, we have gauge, and the observables have certain non-local properties. And non-abelian is quite important here, so you can apply everything to abelian, what I will say here, but for abelian, it's a bit much simpler. And so we will see that the non-abelian case has some structures, which might be a bit surprising depending on where you come from. So what I'm going to say, so the specifics of this proposal applies to 2+1 dimensions, because I will use something which in condensed matter or topological phases is known as fusion basis, which is only defined in 2+1 dimensions so far and relies on a certain definition of what is a basic excitation. But if there's time or if people ask me, I can make remarks on how to possibly extend that to 3+1 dimensions. Also, I will basically work with sphere topology, which in principle is generalizable. And the basis I'm introducing is so far well defined for finite groups, and for Lie groups you need to resolve some technicalities. Okay. So let me just give you the basic idea, which is on the top blackboard. So the question is, you know, can we have a convenient basis which is gauge invariant of states in lattice gauge theory? And I'm not quite sure who defined it. The rumor is it's quantum gravity people. So one choice is what I will call the spin network basis. And that comes with a specific set of diagonizing operators, of course. Having this basis, there's always a kind of simplest state for this choice of basis. using this basis, there's and this vacuum, in some sense, there's a notion of entanglement entropy and also a notion of subsystems. And Horacio, for instance, classified that by some operator algebra methods, and there's basically a choice of electric center, which basically leads to super selection sectors. So I will explain that in more detail if there's time. And so the spin network basis indeed turned out to be really useful for lots of things, and quantum gravity, which I'm not allowed to mention. But I learned it's, for a reason which I will explain, it's quite inconvenient actually for coarse graining, and that's one reason why we actually look for another basis. And so I will explain shortly what that you can also use a fusion basis, where basically all the things apply, where the simplest state is now really a TQFT vacuum, which is TQFT. We call it BF, BF theory, which doesn't stand for anything apparently. And so it leads to another notion of entanglement entropy, another notion of subsystem and gluing. And it's actually a generalization of the magnetic center choice, because actually we also need an electric part for, and not only a magnetic part. And that's maybe the one surprising piece here. Okay. So that was kind of the overview. So here come a bit of LGT, lattice gauge theory basics. So you have a lattice, very surprisingly. And in my case, you imagine the lattice to be on a plane, and there's also an outer plaquette, which is everything outside because I use sphere topology. So lattice gauge theory, I do consider in a Hilbert space formalism. So we do have a Hilbert space and operators or first phase space variables. And if you have a Lie group as a gauge group, then you associate to each link of your lattice the following pair of variables. You have a group element or holonomy and a so-called electric flux, which is a Lie algebra element. And the important thing is that there is a notion of gauge transformations, and you have basically gauge parameters, which are also group elements acting at the nodes of the lattice. And so they transform both the holonomies and also the flux variables. So this is well defined because that's a Lie algebra element, and then you have here the joint action. And this we won't need any, I mean, this is just to show you there's a well defined symplectic structure. So that means the holonomies are conjugated to the fluxes. However, the fluxes are non-commuting. So the components of the fluxes are non-commuting. So that is for a Lie group. And you can basically write a Hilbert space by choosing holonomy polarization, so functions of your group variables associated to the links. Then you can have the holonomies acting. Now holonomies itself are group elements. So rather you take a function of the holonomies. So these act by multiplication on these states. Then you have these fluxes. And so if these act by multiplication, they act as so-called left invariant derivatives or right invariant derivatives, depending on your conventions. Now this is for a Lie group, but if you take kind of the exponentiated action of these operators, then a derivative exponentiated to its translation. So for a finite group, you define an action by, for instance, left translation by a group element, alpha, here alpha minus one. So basically that's kind of the operators we have. And so this operator is certainly gauge non-invariant because it transforms in this index. And if you just have one holonomy, you can also not really form a gauge invariant combination of them. So you need more, and that leads to the Wilson loop operators. Okay, so question to that, because I assume you roughly know that. Okay.
So what you say that you are not defining it as a loop operator, or what?
I was just saying that from G of one link, you cannot form something gauge invariant. So then I was not, but you can take, this will maybe come again. So you can multiply the group elements along a loop and take, for instance, a representation matrix, which in some representation, which I will denote by J, and then take the trace of that, and that turns out to be gauge invariant. So these are Wilson loops, of course, actually the trace of Wilson loops. And this is one very well-known gauge invariant variable. So for the spin network basis, one uses the other more or less obvious gauge invariant variable, which is this kind of square of a flux associated to a link. And actually, this is defines you something like the Casimir operator on G, or it also gives you the kinetic energy part in the Young-Mills Hamiltonian. Okay, basically that is, you know, electric field squared. Okay, and these are the operators which actually diagonalize the spin network basis. because if they are basically Casimirs, so they basically give you eigenvalues JJ plus one, where J are representation labels. And so this is one choice. Which leads to the spin network basis, which is defined by having representation matrices as function on G associated to each link. And these come all with these indices, vector space indices. And so you can contract them with the choice of intertwiners at each node. But typically you can also, you know, in many cases, okay, each intertwiner can be parametrized by an expanded node, and then you can basically also define the corresponding E squared operator for this case. So this is the basis which completely gives you all the information basically about the so-called electrical fields and diagonalizes these combinations of gauge invariant combinations of the electrical field. So now you might ask, is there a dual basis?
Wave function in this basis, something like that?
Yeah, no, now I'm just defining the spin network basis. Yeah. I come back to the spin network basis later on. You can use to write your state in terms of this basis, which means that your state would be yeah, you can write it in this polarization where if you expand expand all nodes, you basically would have wave functions which just depend on these representation labels. Okay. So this basis diagonalizes these Casimir operators, or the kinetic part. Let me also mention there's a simpler state, or simplest basis state, which is the one peaked on all these eigenvalues being zero or having basically the trivial representation for all links. So this is actually the kind of strong coupling limit of Young-Mills theory. Okay. For finite, yeah, the only thing you need is the representations. So you need just the representations for the finite group. Okay, so then, yeah, so for finite group, you would have here some translation operator. But you can define the basis in the same way. So let's ask for like a dual basis. Because actually the state, okay, it's a so-called strong coupling limit is where the kinetic part of your Young-Mills Hamiltonian vanishes. But say you're interested in these TQFT states, which are BF vacuum, which are actually defined by vanishing curvature, that's the opposite case. So basically, you want to define a basis where the simplest state is actually the BF vacuum. And so okay, that will be basically an adaptation of the fusion of what is called fusion basis, and we will see why it's called fusion basis also. And so let's think. So you could use basically, in fact, as your operators specifying the basis, all traces of all Wilson loops. I mean, the traces of all Wilson loops. However, you would have. I mean, this would give you all the information on all the holonomies, all the Gauge-Invariant holonomies. But then you have to figure out how to have a not overcomplete choice of these operators. and so I'll give you one description, which gives you basically a complete so basically it gives you a maximally commuting subset, a maximally commuting set of gauge invariant variables, which specifies this basis. And the first part you need to have is kind of a hierarchical set of trace Wilson loop. So what do I mean? So you take basically Wilson loops of all elementary plaquettes. then you need to kind of invent either you can call it coarse graining scheme or fusion scheme. It's basically you make a choice of basically pairing two elementary plaquettes to a bigger plaquette for all these things. So in some sense, you fuse two defect excitation to a new one, and so on. And of course, you can continue to do so, and so on, until you are left with just a big plaquette. So basically, that That will be the this hierarchical set of Wilson loop operators.
But your scheme was arbitrary, or there must be some rules.
No, the only rule is that for each plaquette you need one. So actually, you need also for the outer plaquette one. And then you pair always two things.
With other representation.
This other, yeah. I mean, here, no. So it's even more arbitrary, as I was saying here, because you could also first fuse two plaquettes and then take a third one, which is like a fusion tree. And actually, you can represent it in a fusion tree. And you can take any kind of tree in some sense. And the endpoints of the tree are the plaquettes. So it's basically, in fact, the fusion basis comes from the idea that at each plaquette there could be some excitation, and so this is just kind of fusion of particles with each other. Okay, we take this hierarchical set of traces of Wilson loops, and is this basis complete? It's not. So it's actually not complete, but you need to add some other part of some funny other kind of operators. And this is a somewhat surprising part. And
for
now,
the Abelian case is complete, right?
For the Abelian case, this is complete.
Like
yeah, so for the Abelian case, it's even much less. It would be yeah. just the elementary plaquettes. Yeah, because the Wilson loops would just add.
Yeah.
But for the non-Abelian case, you need all these. They're coupling rules, actually. So it's not completely free. So if you have the two elementary things, you can only have a range of certain curvatures which come from two elementary ones. So if you, in the non-Abelian group, if you add two curvatures, you add two group elements, and you only have gauge invariant information, you know, you add them and gauge average again, you can only get a certain range of a bigger curvature. But in a non-Abelian case, even that is not sufficient. So now I'm going to explain what these additional variables are, or give you an idea, because it's a bit technical involved, I mean, slightly involved. And actually, they come from the flux observables. So we need to add an electric part. And so it's a bit surprising, because if we consider the following combination of the electric fluxes, so let me actually draw the electric fluxes associated to a link here. I draw them as little vectors in this direction. So you can basically consider the sum of these four fluxes. And in this case, I can add them because the fluxes sit in a frame. And here they all sit in this frame of this node. So now for a gauge invariant state, this has to be actually zero, because that imposes gauge invariance. Because the fluxes do something like multiplication from the left or right. So if I write this, it means that the state here is invariant under multiplication under the gauge action. Okay, and this constraint is basically known. Okay, I don't know if it's known, but I call it Gauss constraint. It's basically gauge invariant, implementing gauge invariance. So now we can actually you could actually say that this little thing corresponds to also loop-like observable, where you add up the fluxes, which kind of belong to the links, which are cut by this dashed line here. so we can do the same and add up these fluxes. So now there's one difficulty, which is the fluxes all live in different reference frames. So to make that concrete, you first would say, okay, I parallel transport everything to this node. And so you actually parallel transport everything back and forth. So I will just write it a bit abstract as there's some parallel transport, say from root to point A, gr minus one. So you consider that also for a closed loop. And this, for non-abelian gauge theory, okay, you wouldn't have this parallel transport. For abelian gauge theory, you would not have this parallel transport. This is actually also vanishing. So we, but for non-abelian, it is not vanishing. And the reason why it's not vanishing is, I mean, you could expect that this vanishes because you could use all the elementary Gauss constraints to get the bigger one. But if you have curvature, you can show basically that it makes a difference if you only if you have curvature, so it does not actually apply to the BF vacuum, you can get some non-vanishing result here. And so, so these are so-called, I mean, these operators are kind of related to Toft loop, but one needs to be is a bit careful. The Toft loop is something defined in 3 plus 1, but it's something which you need to specify a surface. And so equivalent is that it gives you kind of the dependence on the surface of this operator. And here, it's something which also tells you how things depend if you transport things around one thing. So, so the thing is, basically, in a non-abelian gauge theory, you do get kind of macroscopic electric charge in some sense, because the violation of the Gauss constraint here, you would define as electric charge. So you do get electric charge. You need to add basically some information from this thing to your basis. The kind of information you add is a bit more complicated. So you take this X loop. let me. So this is some technical detail you don't need to follow completely. So you take a certain projection of this flux observable into account, and the projection is as follows. You consider basically group elements which commute with G, which is a holonomy associated to this loop, which means that you consider the stabilizer of your holonomy. So you take a representation, which I will call R of this stabilizer of this holonomy, and you take the something like the trace of this thing, and so then you get something which depends on R. So let me. Well, let me define this as a function x of this representation R. And this R can be actually exactly to be understood as giving you the size of your kind of your charge. So the amount of electric charge. Okay, yeah?
So just a basic question. So you're saying you're calculating the electric flux, but the way you've drawn it, I would interpret it more as a curl, so I must be misinterpreting why you're drawing the arrows.
This is, yeah, so it's really diff E, the divergence of E. I draw these arrows in this way because there's a geometric interpretation to it, which is not important here, and it actually, in this geometry, this part really gives you kind of geometrically a vector from here to here in this geometry interpretation.
At this point, are you considering any non-trivial loop?
So this is just saying that macroscopically you can have electric charge that makes coarse graining in the spin network basis a bit hard because you cannot really, I mean, it's a bit hard to define coarse grained spin networks because it would be gauge non-invariant and then it's a bit. So what one takes, is kind of in this was defined at some point by Kitaev. You can summarize both this kind of observable and the Wilson loop in something known as the Ribbon operator. And so here we consider kind of the closed Ribbon, a closed Ribbon operator. So basically that is Wilson loop, and I don't know, some flux loop here. And so now I'm telling you, I mean, you can prove it, but what I'm telling you is that the complete set of maximally commuting observables is actually the same hierarchical choice or set of ribbon, of these closed ribbon operators. Okay, now I think I have to hurry up, but it's big. So this leads to the fusion basis. So for each of these hierarchical loops upstairs, you have kind of the amount of curvature, which technically is a conjugacy class, and say for SE2, just one Engel. And you have this representation R. And actually, there's an entire theory behind it. And these things, these labels, define actually a representation of the so-called Drinfeld double of the group. And you can understand this as magnetic charge, electric charge. Okay. So the interesting aspect, maybe the main difference between these two bases is also that the spin network basis is completely local, whereas this is kind of multi-scale in some sense and non-local. And I don't know, how many minutes do I have? Minus 10. I can explain a bit more this extension of Hilbert spaces, or I can not and just claim things in this table, which is okay. Maybe yeah. So I'll try this 10 minutes. Okay. So now you need to read this right hand basis thing that you can't read. Okay, basically we covered the first 2 points. So we only have 5 other points to cover. So that just gives you the correspondence between spin network bases and fusion bases, and it writes you the diagonalizing operators there. And the simplest state is here where basically it's peaked on all fluxes vanishing. And here it's actually this topological quantum field theory vacuum, the BF vacuum, where curvature is vanishing and gauge invariant. And of course, simplest state means that all labels are trivial in both cases. Something very deep here. So now we come actually to the issue of entanglement entropy, where you have actually, in principle, given the same Hilbert space, A. And okay, let's in principle also consider gauge invariant states, also the fusion basis. You can easily include gauge non-invariant states because it's very natural, because it just means that you have also torsion or this additional degrees of freedom for those basic plaquettes. And then you have some further frame indices, which I'm not going too much into. Okay, so the problem is if you define, say, entanglement entropy, you have to somehow define a region A and a region B. And one way to do it is to say, this should all to the left should define me region A and all to the right should define me region B. Where I wasn't careful, I should have actually, I mean, ignoring spherical topology here. But the problem would be to what to do with these observables which belong to these links. Now, basically Donnelly, which I mentioned before, and some other people basically propose the following trick to do that, which is basically to extend this gauge invariant Hilbert space. And you can describe it in the spin network basis. So here you have all these links which are labeled by boundary spins. And so you could, and so the extension would basically consist of doubling all these spins. And in principle, you have also vector space indices in this representation space belonging to this link. And so N, A, 1, 2. So you have also G, 1, B, 1, B. Okay. And so this very easily, so here you would have just kind of a states which live in one set. Here you have states which live in right set, in the right set. And you could, in principle, consider the tensor product HA, HB. So what you do, you start with a state in your original gauge invariant Hilbert space. You embed it into HA, tensor product HB, and then you trace out B. And so I'm not going through the thing, but what you can show is that the entanglement entropy comes in three pieces. One is that you can basically define a probability distribution of your state, which gives you just the probability of being in the state where this given boundary spins. And you can basically consider the classical, this is a classical, the Shannon entropy of this thing. Then there's another contribution, which kind of comes from the magnetic, from these vector space indices. And so this is also kind of a classical probability contribution. And then there's a real quantum entropy, which is defined from density matrices, which are however labeled by these fixed boundary spins. Now, just to mention that Horatio and friends said you can also get this formula by taking an operator algebra viewpoint. And then you need to define entanglement entropy roughly by splitting your operator algebra into two parts. But what you can define is a notion of a center. It's a set of observables commuting with everything. And if you have that, you basically have super selection sectors, which are labeled by the eigenvalues of the center. And so this can be explained by using these super selection sectors and write D for the density matrices. And then what you basically can do is you have a big density matrix, which, however, block diagonalizes with respect to the super selection sectors. And so this part is just a classical probability distribution, which comes from the super selection sectors. And so this comes from, in the abelian case, it's a bit easier from the electric center. In the non-abelian case, I'm not sure how to define a center because it includes all the x, the Casimirs, of course, they commute with each other, and then the fluxes are non-commuting. So either you introduce some gauge non-invariant things like this, some components of xi, or you just say that this contribution comes from the non-abelianness. It's just this contribution which you get from.
Yeah, you are reviewing the standard.
That is Donnelly stuff. Yeah.
Donnelly,
Because what you can now do for the fusion basis is the same thing for the fusion basis. And so it's now this picture which you don't see. which I don't know. So we had this fusion basis which defined, which comes basically with the notion of grouping plaquettes to larger plaquettes, which you can put into a so-called fusion tree if you want to. I'll take this example. So these endpoints define plaquettes, and this is how I group my plaquettes. So that's a bit of abstract picture. And then, you can decide I want to define my splitting of the Hilbert space into two parts, also A and B. So these things are labeled by these representation labels, which technically is a Grünfeld double. And so here I also need to kind of double this row, which usually would be just one row. And actually, there's also something like vector space indices in this representation, which I denote as A and B because they can be higher than one dimensional. and then, so this would define the extension of the Hilbert space. You do all the same thing. You do get the same formula. So here there's only one row delta. So I don't have a sum here. Basically, everything is the same. And that's actually the generalization to the magnetic center, just that the magnetic center, instead of just having the Wilson loop, you need to add actually this flux loop.
It's only one because of two plus one
dimension. I haven't talked about how many. It's in 3+1. It's a Wilson loop which goes around one region. It's on the sphere, so it's a loop which just goes around this one region. So the interesting thing, what I also want to say, maybe this is the last part of the message, is that in both cases you can define a funny version of continuum limit, and certain results you can actually hold in the continuum limit and are actually finite. Here the entanglement entropy is finite for certain states. So so if you consider a spin network Bayes state and apply Donnelly's definition or electric center, then you can also compute the kind of entanglement entropy, which only comes from the classical part. It's basically a sum over all these dimensions of these links. The vacuum for the state x equal where all fluxes vanishes comes as vanishing entropy. If you, however, consider kind of a BF vacuum on the lattice, the result for the entanglement entropy depends on your lattice. So if you add more links, you do get something proportional to the number of links. And this would be divergent in the continuum limit if you add more and more links. But say you consider kind of a state which even would be in the continuum and would be defined by all fluxes vanishing, and you apply some Wilson loops to the state, then you can, you would get basically as an entanglement entropy in the Donnelly definition or this electric center definition the same result, where J are the labels associated to the Wilson lines. So you would take n Wilson lines which go from region A to region B. So this you could actually see as kind of a continuum result. If you have a funny continuum limit where you say, you know, you start from the electric field equal to zero vacuum. So for the fusion basis procedure, the same kind of all these dualized things apply. So the BF vacuum, as you have also found in the Billing case, has vanishing entropy. If you just take a fusion basis state, you just get this one contribution, which is kind of the same as here. Here you would have the sum, here you just have one term. On the other hand, you can also apply so-called open ribbon operators. So these open ribbon operators generate charges at the ends. And so you can also apply n open ribbon operators going from region A to region B. And you would find the same formula for the entanglement entropy. Now this you can also understand as a continuum result, where you say, okay, you start with the BF vacuum, it's topological quantum field theory, and you consider a state generated by applying these ribbon operators. And so in fact, like the right version is less lattice dependent than the left version, depending on what you understand as lattice. So here, the left version really depends on where you put the full Wilson lines, and the right has only excitation at the end of the ribbons.
Sorry? Does this result agree with the results following from replica trick?
So here, interestingly, in general, there's a recent paper by Shinsei Rui, where he considers Chern-Simons DQFT and computes that more in a path integral. But he needs to regularize. So he gets two additional terms. And one is this, it has something to do with a category theory dimension. But the other is divergent, which comes from applying this field theory method. So he needs to regularize, and this is comes with a divergence here.
So the word by trivial and confidence.
Who?
Trivial.
I don't know it, so the other stuff is that Laurent together with William Donnelly then considered a notion of subsystem, defining subsystems in gauge theory, which was kind of adapted to, in some sense, a spin network basis. And in fact, this extension violates, for instance, the Gauss constraint at every link. And if you want to understand that as defining you how to glue two things together, you in some sense assume that everywhere away from the link, you have vanishing electric field. Because otherwise, you would need to refine your lattice. So here, we need less information in some sense to glue two things together. Because what we assume that around the boundary, we don't have any charge, no magnetic or no electric charge. So we only need some global charge information to glue the two subsystems again together. Anyway, that concludes my talk. So, yeah.